Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Okay, that semi worked. We got it, we got it. All right, Rick, you do your thing. Ellen, you do your thing.
Hey, I went to MOTAT on Sunday.
Did you? How was
it? Yes, we took our three-year-old grandnephew there.
Grandnephew,
I'm not sure. Grandnephew, whatever.
That's but, cute.
And I've never seen a kid. Damn near wet himself. He had so much fun. The big planes, he thought it was so cool.
It's so cool.
MOTAT.
Not even saying that because of...
Yeah,
you know,
no. But it's fabulous.
A great place.
Really, really cool. Right, what are we going to talk about today?
Hydroxychloroquine.
My goodness me. It just never goes away, does it? Now, regular listeners, will know that last time I was on, we were talking about hydroxychloroquine. And... at that stage, there was a paper in the very eminent medical journal, The Lancet, which said that not only is it no good for fighting COVID-19, it also is positively dangerous in some respects. And so therefore, on the basis of this paper, the World Health Organization had basically stopped all investigations into hydroxychloroquine because this paper said, nah, it's bad. You know, it's potentially bad.
Okay.
Now, in the intervening 2 weeks, this paper has been withdrawn from the literature, which is kind of unusual. Yeah, and it's not very good. So there were a few warning signs there. People obviously missed them. But the guts of it is that this paper was written by people at a company called Surgisphere. And this company purported to have obtained hospital records from around about at least 1,000 hospitals worldwide who were treating COVID-19 patients. They had got all of their patient data, basically, and they had analysed it and written the paper. Okay, now that sounds
decent.
Sort of eminently reasonable, until a little bit of sleuthing on behalf of a number of people, including The Guardian over in the UK. And then basically what they found was that this company had six employees, one of whom was a sci-fi author, fantasy artist, and another one was a quote, adult model, unquote. And was run by a guy by the name of Sapan Desai. Okay. And so this immediately sort of cast doubt on the whole thing, because there's no way in the world that you can get a company with six employees to liaise with thousands, you know, over 1,000 hospitals all around the world, get all of their patient data in all of the different formats that it was, put it into the one format, analyze it, blah, 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 etc.
It's just not.
So it just ain't going to happen. And so that sort of sent everything into a bit of a tailspin. And so this company, Surgisphere, claimed to have all of these collaborations with places around the world, big universities, big hospitals. So places like Stanford, University of Minnesota, University of Utah, University of Glasgow, they were all on the website of Surgisphere as collaborators and you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, the press then went to those places and said, do you know this Surgisphere? And then just said, no, we haven't had any collaboration. We don't know who these people are, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Extremely, extremely awkward. And especially, as I said, because the World Health Organization, on the basis of that Lancet paper, said, right, we're going to stop all investigations into hydroxychloroquine. So as a result of that, once the paper was retracted and all of these sort of things came up, they then said, okay, well, shit, let's restart these.
Oh my gosh. Because
there's no evidence, there's no verified evidence out there that this is potentially harmful. So we might as well keep studying it. And so they restarted their studies. And then just overnight, in fact, or yesterday, the US FDA, so the Food and Drug Administration, came out and said, right, so this we're going to remove our emergency approval of hydroxychloroquine. We're not going to be studying this anymore. And now there's actual out there verified data saying that no, it doesn't do a damn thing. That's not necessarily saying that it's nasty or anything like that, but verified data for, you know, using real bloody clinical studies and all of that stuff now is out there. And this was just
what a, oh, boy, you might want to say the word, should I say it, a shit show.
I was going to say
okay,
something. But no, something I'm really not allowed to say.
Well, it starts, I mean,
with cluster, but yeah.
Well, but it's, I suppose what this is pointing out is the importance of verified data.
It is, and I mean,
fundamental here, not the fact that Trump finally has been proven wrong, but that there is a process in which has to be undertaken before.
You're
that.
Absolutely right. There is a process, and obviously, now the main problem with COVID-19 is that it just took everybody by surprise, basically. And, you know, everything had to be done in a very, very short period of time. So all of these studies, et cetera, have been done under constraints of time that just don't normally apply in normal situations. And so, you know, everything perhaps is a bit of a rush job with all of this sort of stuff. And sadly, it seems, and I have to be careful saying this because, you know, libelous and all that sort of stuff, but it just seems like somebody might have taken advantage of this, you know, this very, very short time
for
period.
For what gain?
For what gain? I have no idea. Okay. Honestly, I really don't understand it.
For,
I mean, surely you would think that they knew that they were going to get caught out on this, surely. And, you know, with something as earth-shattering, literally, as COVID-19. So, you know, this paper, when it was published, was going to be subject to the most extraordinary scrutiny.
Hmm.
It just was always going to be. So how the hell anybody ever thought that they were going to get away with this for the sake of a paper in the world's, you know, possibly best, you know, medical journal? Bloody hell.
Okay.
It just defies logic. It really, really does.
Do you want to add anything on that, or shall we just leave it there until the next time we have to talk about it?
No, the latest thing is some, I was reading it this morning, some drug that they think might prolong the life of patients on ventilators, and it's just a very simple, it was an antibiotic or something, I can't remember, but
would that
this
mean
is
that
the latest thing.
Prolong now, in order to then... like you have more time to recover.
No, I think it's a sort of a recovery thing. I think they're sort of saying that 1 in 8 of the people on the ventilators recovered when they were taking this stuff. So,
okay. Alrighty.
Boy, oh boy! But let's just get rid of this goddamn virus, eh?
Yes, indeed. Jeez,
honestly.
And shall we move into talking now about some positive news?
Indeed.
Some electricity being
that's
made.
No pun intended. I like that. Positive? Very good. Very good. Okay, so...
I didn't even realise I was doing that, I'll be
never,
honest.
Never admit that. So, Shadows. Shadows and
Not
Light.
Not the bar.
Shadows and Light. Great Joni Mitchell album, that. Shadows and Light. There, I'm segueing nicely.
Okay. Into,
everyone knows who Joni Mitchell is, hopefully. Shadows are not pretty... Well, you'd think they're probably not great for generating electricity. We go on about solar power and stuff like that, and obviously solar power is a brilliant thing. The one thing you kind of need for it is light.
Light. Energy.
Okay. And the way that it works kind of is, you know, you've got your silicon-based solar cells, and they absorb the light, and that kicks up electrons from a valence band into a conduction band across the Fermi level, and blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah, and you get electricity like that. And you'd think shadows would sort of play no part in the generation of electricity, but these guys at the National University of Singapore have just published a paper, which I think is really, really cool, where they are basically taking these silicon solar cells, and they put a very, very, very thin coating of gold on them. Okay, now that doesn't sound particularly, non-expensive, shall we say. But what then seems to happen is that you get a different method of electricity generation in these. So your solar cells absorb the light, they kick an electron actually from the silicon to the gold. This is the big difference.
Okay.
And this device, now, if you put one half of it in the light and one half of it in the shade, then the bit that's in the shade, it's not getting those electrons kicked up. The other ones are getting them kicked up into the gold, and that creates a potential difference, which is otherwise known as a voltage. And once you've got a voltage and some electrons, then you get the flow of electric current. Okay. And this relies on part of your device being in the light and part of the device being in the dark. That's what actually generates the voltage. And that's really, really seriously cool.
Very cool.
And so they are thinking, well, you know, we can use this now in places where you have shadows. So you don't have to have direct sunlight for this to work. And in fact, the device that they've built at the moment works 200% better than silicon solar cells do in shadows. So, you know, when it's cloudy up there and stuff like that, you know, the silicon-based solar cells don't work brilliantly. And this one does, because it's just relying on the difference, on the contrast between light and shadow. Now, obviously, the greater the contrast, the greater the current. The bigger the voltage, the greater the current, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. At the moment, they're just in the sort of, you know, very, very early stages, as they often are when I talk about these things, you know.
That's all good.
The changing the world is, you know, years down the track sort of thing. But they've actually got it to power, you know, small electrical devices.
Brilliant.
Doing this. And I think it's just amazing. Just, yeah. Who the hell thought of doing that?
So is it a bit more, like, consistent than solar panels?
Well, again, it's depending on the difference between the light and the dark, so the difference in the amount between the light and the shade. So if you've got, as I say, it's going to work best when, you know, you're sort of cloudy or whatever and you don't have so much light, because it just sort of inherently works better in shady conditions. So
maybe it could work alongside solar panels. Yep. So that once that light does get dimmer and therefore the solar panels don't work, like you say, Felix, as well,
yep,
you have the substitute come in,
yep,
which is... Because this is one of the issues, I think, around that kind of green energy or renewable energy, right? And this idea that we want to put lots more investment into solar, for example, but because solar isn't reliable 24/7, they have to run coal or whatever it is in the area to also back up the system in case
Or they need better batteries.
Right.
That's the big thing, you know, batteries. You've got to make fantastic batteries.
Yeah.
Somehow, if you can store all of the stuff that you're generating during daylight
then
hours,
you can keep.
Then, you know, then you're laughing. So
right.
That's where they're putting the money into, and creating better solar cells as well. So this is all part of that. And look, shit, this is where the future of humanity lies in solar power. It just is. Mm. You know, forget fossil fuels, forget burning coal, forget all of that stuff. You know, 100 years from now, they'll look back and laugh at what we did, very probably, because they'll have all of this stuff sorted. So... And a bit of chemists that do it, of course.
All right, let's touch on our final story. And this is the possibility of 36 civilizations in outer space. I feel like you're a bit sceptical on this one, Alan.
Yeah, well, I thought the answer to life, the universe and everything was 42, according to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
As in there are 42?
No.
Just 42.
Just 42.
Okay.
You haven't read the book?
No. Sorry.
Oh, you've got a treat ahead of you, I'll tell you that. It's a very good book. Right, so... obviously, you look out in the stars at night and you think, right, what are the chances? How many alien civilizations are there out there? Are we the only ones? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, in 1961, a fellow by the name of Drake came up with the eponymous named equation, the Drake equation. And he sort of put everything together in terms of probabilities of life existing in our galaxy, the Milky Way, okay, which is, remember, one of only a squillion galaxies out in the universe, okay? Now, at the risk of sounding really dull, okay, so this equation, you've got the average number of stars formed per year, multiplied by the fraction of those that can form planets, multiplied by the fraction of those that can support life, multiplied by the fraction of those that actually form life, multiplied by the fraction of those that develop intelligent life forms, multiplied by the fraction of those that develop technology, multiplied by the average lifetime of a communicating species. There we go.
Wow.
So we've got seven factors in the Drake equation, basically. And we only know the answer to the first one of those.
Oh, gosh.
everything else is a guess, basically.
Wow.
So roughly, apparently, there are seven or so planets formed in our galaxy every year. And all of those other fractions, you know, the fraction of, you know, planets and blah, 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 that can support life, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And people have looked at this over many years and they've, and they've come up with estimates for the answer to this particular problem from zero to all the way to a few billion, okay?
Whoa.
Which is kind of, you know, a bit broad. So wanting to get a little bit better estimate on this, so there's workers at Nottingham, University of Nottingham, and they've made some sort of assumptions, and most of the assumptions are sort of based on the fact that any planet that's going to be able to support life and support intelligent life and lead to quote-unquote civilization and all that sort of stuff is going to be sort of Earth-like. sort of in size and in distance from the sun and all of that sort of thing, you know, the Goldilocks zone, as they call it, sort of thing. And on the basis of those assumptions, they have narrowed down the Drake equation from zero to a few billion to now 4 and 211.
Okay.
And the most probable number seems to be 36. They reckon that there's 36 possible civilizations out there in our galaxy, in the Milky Way. And remember, the Milky Way is made up of somewhere between 100 and 400 billion stars, you know, each of which have got, you know, God knows how many associated planets going around them, etc., etc. So of all of that, then 36 seems to be the number.
I feel like it's definitely more than 36. It's a very small number.
And yeah, you say I'm a bit skeptical. Yeah, it does seem to be your very sort of educated guesses sort of the whole way through. But, you know, my pig ignorant view of all of this is there's got to be something else.
Of course.
There just has to be.
That's definitely,
it's not a very scientific viewpoint, but there just has to be.
But I think it's fair to say it's pretty huge.
But anyway, so this is the, you know, this is the finest minds on the planet. So,
brilliant.
You know, doing all this stuff, and there we go.
We've got a couple of questions, Alan. Uh-oh. Someone's saying, where is the research being done and who by around that solar, the gold?
National University of Singapore.
Thank
NUS.
You very much.
Yes. Yep.
Also, someone just saying, what about Nikola Tesla free power from AC Earth?
Yeah. Old Tesla. Okay. Yeah.
And then finally,
Tesla was brilliant, but he was a bit of a loony, I think. He was amazing guy. Yeah.
Someone asking, I feel Trump just wants to be thrown out and keeps doing more outrageous things. On that note, what are symptoms of Adderall addiction?
Oh, you're asking the wrong person there.
All right. Well, let's leave it there then.
My goodness, questions.
Thank
there we go.
You so much, Alan.
Fantastic.
For coming in as usual.
Always a pleasure.
We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Shall do. Take it easy.